So AFP Audio is today talking to Associate Professor Katie Allen. Hi, Katie.
Hello.
Katie is one of the authors of an article in the May 2012 edition of AFP on gastroesophageal reflux in children. What's the worry? Katie Allen is a paediatric gastroenterologist and allergist at the Royal Children's Hospital, the Murdoch Children's Research Institute and the University of Melbourne. So thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So reflux is something every parent and every doctor has heard about. The article in AFP considers this very common question. Can you tell us a little bit about the natural history of gastroesophageal reflux in infants?
Yes, well, gastroesophageal reflux is a very common condition, and there's two ways we like to distinguish it. We distinguish it as just reflux, and then we also talk about gastroesophageal reflux disease. So one of them is just the natural tendency for the passage of gastric contents to pass back up into the esophagus in the young and immature infant, and that occurs in quite a few infants in the first few months of life. When it has an impact on symptoms, troublesome symptoms and complications, then we call it gastroesophageal reflux disease. So in the case of reflux itself, you don't necessarily have to treat, but if it's causing serious symptoms and consequences, of course we do.
Yep. And one of the questions that commonly gets asked by of GPs is, could it be allergy? Can you tell us a little bit about how allergy, reflux and reflux disease fit together?
Sure. So when we think of cow's milk allergy syndromes, there's two sorts of syndromes. There's the IgE-mediated and there's the non-IgE-mediated. The non-IgE-mediated mechanisms are really easy to actually recognise. The parents come in and say we gave them a few mils of a bit of milk, a new formula, or they'd just stopped breastfeeding, or it actually can occur when the mother is breastfeeding because the milk antigens do pass through the breast milk. And the infants will have vomiting within a few minutes and also signs of a rash or urticaria or swelling of the face and angioedema or even anaphylaxis. The other form of adverse reaction to cow's milk is non-IgE-mediated cow's milk allergy. And sometimes that's referred to as cow's milk intolerance because we don't really know the mechanism. We're clever enough to say it's non-IgE-mediated, and we do know it's a reliable and reproducible reaction. But that's harder for clinicians and parents to make the association. And we always say to parents, it's very important to understand when you're first exposing the baby to a new protein such as cow's milk, because it's usually at the first or second or early in the introduction of a new protein such as cow's milk in the baby's diet. So if new gut-related symptoms occur, which includes, of course, reflux, then consideration of whether it's cow's milk allergy should always be thought through.
And the article makes a point that a common or key element on history is that it usually has occurred within 4 weeks of the first exposure.
Exactly. So if the mother's having cow's milk in her breast milk, or cow's milk, it will get into her breast milk, so you still need to ask the history of whether the mother's having cow's milk. But there are some conditions where, sometimes the gastroesophageal reflux doesn't demonstrate itself until there's a decent amount of protein in the diet, so the baby needs to actually start drinking formula of some sort, or cheese or yogurt or dairy products in their solid diet as well. And that can precipitate in the first few weeks of introduction vomiting, which can be cow's milk-induced gastroesophageal reflux.
And so do you get a clue about that for what's the sort of diagnostic process?
Well, it's actually quite simple, and it's something that can be done at home, provided there are no symptoms suggestive of an immediate reaction, which, of course, we worry about, because if it's an immediate reaction, meaning occurring within minutes, then we worry about whether the child has a risk of anaphylaxis, because the IgE-mediated form is obviously more serious with regards to that risk. But if there's no early symptoms and it has occurred a few weeks after starting cow's milk and their symptoms are vomiting and not necessarily immediately related to the ingestion of cow's milk but some hours later, then what we talk about is an elimination rechallenge sequence. So the first thing to do is to eliminate the cow's milk protein from the infant's diet on two levels. Firstly, from the milk they drink, so either take the cow's milk out of the mother's milk, the mother's diet,
yep.
So it's out of the mother's milk,
yes.
Or remove the protein from the formula. And the second step is to remove it from the solids, so dairy, including cheese and yogurt and ice cream and margarine. And you can go to the Royal Children's Hospital clinical practice guidelines in order to find out how to take cow's milk protein more formally out of the diet. But the parents can initiate that where they remove it from the baby's diet, either from breastfeeding or solids or from the formula for 2 weeks, and then reintroduce and see if new symptoms recur or the symptom of vomiting recurs when the cow's milk protein is reintroduced. And that's a very clearly defined, carefully managed way of understanding whether the child has cow's milk-induced gastroesophageal reflux. Now, when it comes to the type of formulas, there's a 3 steps to the type of formulas that we would recommend for eliminating cow's milk. If the child is over 6 months, it's safe to try a soy-based formula, and that's because they're having other forms of protein. If the child's under 6 months, we recommend going to the second-line formula, which is an extensively hydrolyzed formula, and that includes either Pepti Junior or Alfare. And about 10% of children can't tolerate the extensively hydrolyzed formula because there still remains a small amount of the long-chain protein still in the formula. So they then need to, about 10% need to go on to the third line of formula, which is an amino acid-based formula, which in Australia is either Neocate or Elicare.
Okay. And so I think the key message is for a GP is the two types of allergy, the immediate or minute likely one, which is basically don't give them, send and
refer them on to an allergist.
Yep.
Yes. Or now actually we're recommending they can do a blood test for the cow's milk IgE antibody. So they just do a blood test. It's often called a RAST test or what we call a CAPFIA. That's the methodology. And what they're detecting is serum specific cow's milk IgE. So you would say, I'd like the serum antibodies or serum IgE antibodies to cow's milk. And if they're negative, it may be safe to introduce. But if they're positive, they should then refer them to an allergist.
Yeah. Okay. And to change tax a little bit, eosinophilic esophagitis is a condition that the article describes as being relatively recently recognised. What are some of the key things to know about that for a GP?
So eosinophilic esophagitis can have significant crossover manifestations with gastroesophageal reflux, which is cow's milk induced. And in fact, cow's milk induced eosinophilic esophagitis also occurs. The only way to make the diagnosis of EOE, which is a shortening of that term, is to do an endoscopy and to do a biopsy to characterise that someone has 15 eosinophils per high power field on endoscopic biopsy of the esophagus, because the esophagus is normally devoid of any eosinophils, and if you have more than 15 per high power field, that clinches the diagnosis. The biggest question for general paediatricians and families, however, is who should be referred for endoscopy. And we're still grappling with that somewhat, but we can say there are some red flags for referral for endoscopy to consider either the confirmation or the exclusion of EOE. And those sorts of factors include complete food refusal, a difficulty with swallowing, so especially in an older child it's easy to elicit because they're not on pureed food, but once a child maybe later in the first year or in the second or third year of life can't easily eat bread or meat, it gets stuck, so any food sticking is definitely a red flag sign, or they refuse to eat chewy food, they spit it out after they've chewed up the meat, they spit out the meat rather than swallowing it, or food impaction itself, which if food gets impacted, we would always refer for endoscopy to understand why the food had got impacted. So there's a sort of full spectrum from early feeding refusal, significant vomiting that's not responding to proton pump inhibitors if it's severe and persistent vomiting, or food sticking or choking would be signs I'd be concerned about.
Okay. So the article then makes the point that the differential diagnosis of a child with chronic vomiting is quite wide and includes most organ systems and does have lists there. It also has a list of the warning features that would require investigation. And I suppose whilst people can look at the whole list in Table 1, it includes vomiting with bile or blood, features of the systemic illness such as lethargy and failure to thrive, bowel habit problems, physical examination findings or metabolic or genetic sort of syndromes. Assuming that there is no red flags and you've adequately considered all the differentials and you're leaning towards this as a gastroesophageal reflux presentation, what are the management principles that we should follow?
So, as you said, we first of all need to exclude that there's no signs or symptoms consistent with another pathology, such as intracranial or metabolic or surgical, and that we've eliminated simple common differentials, which would include cow's milk-induced gastroesophageal reflux. So, for the most part, simple gastroesophageal reflux is benign and self-limiting in the first year of life and was resolved by 18 months. However, if it is having a secondary set of complications and we're referring it to as gastroesophageal reflux disease, then we will try formula thickening and potentially proton pump inhibitors or H2 antagonists.
And so what is the role of pharmacological therapy for reflux disease?
Well, I should also add that antacids are probably... it can be used as a buffering agent for rapid symptom resolution, and sometimes they can be used in a slightly diagnostic way where if you're not sure when children have symptoms of heartburn or not, it can be difficult for them to describe. And if you can give them some antacids and things get better in the older child, then you know that's probably what you're dealing with. But you need to be very careful of using antacids in young infants with reflux, especially long-term use.
Yes, it's almost the equivalent of giving people pink mix in emergency departments. People who are a bit older and you're wondering whether it's cardiac or heartburn.
Yes, but don't do that in infants.
No.
There's kind of a difference between the way we manage infants, where mostly it's benign. If the child's not failing to thrive and the child is well and happy, thriving, following the growth percentiles and is refluxing contents, they will in general improve by 12 to 18 months. We would normally trial a trial of elimination of cow's milk for a two-week period and then reintroduce. And if there's no difference in symptoms and the child's happy and thriving, we wouldn't do anything other than potentially thicken formula. If the child has had a later onset of reflux or a new onset, you're more likely to consider some of the other differential diagnoses. And if it looks like it's a fairly benign form of gastroesophageal reflux disease in an older child, we would try a one-month trial of proton pump inhibitors or histamine receptor antagonists to see whether we could damp down the response. And after that, if there's no response after four weeks or to improve symptoms, then I would refer to a paediatric gastroenterologist for further management.
Okay. And so the failure to respond is one reason to refer. What are some of the other reasons we should consider referral?
Well, I think any child who's having failure to thrive should be definitely referred to a gastroenterologist. If there's hematemesis, that would be another concern, unless it's just, you know, the child's had a significant retch and has got a Mallory vice, which is self-limiting, which is a small tear of the lower esophagus, which can be from forceful retching. But persistent forceful vomiting or hematemesis or even melena would be something definitely to refer. And then other symptomatics, other symptom complexes that involve non-gastrointestinal disease would, of course, need to be referred to the appropriate specialist.
Okay. So what are a few key points that GPs should remember when thinking about infants with gastroesophageal reflux?
Well, I think there's a difference between infants and the older child. I think infants in general will have symptom resolution if it's not affecting their weight or their growth and development. If the child is happy, then you're really treating the parents rather than the child. So reassurance and simple measures such as thickening of the feeds can be a very simple way to do it, a simple way to manage these symptoms. And, of course, it's always quite useful just to try a two-week elimination diet of cow's milk, plus or minus soy elimination as well. In the older child, a simple one-month trial of proton pump inhibitor can be highly effective and can turn off the cycle, but any more sophisticated investigations would probably require referral to a gastroenterologist for further testing.
Okay. Thanks a lot for talking to us today, Katie.
My pleasure.